This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat
with guest Demos Papademos.
I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. So yes, this is another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. And what's the closest river to us right now?
Mahoning.
Mahoning, that's right. Okay, well this just is the Mahoning River edition.
Just down the street, Mahoning Avenue.
Very nice. Okay, so we got one.
And it is a burning river as well. Maybe not right now, but it has burned in the past, I think.
Well, we are in Youngstown, and Youngstown is another working town, yeah. Just like Cleveland, so it's very believable. And joining us today, Mr. Demos Papademos.
Hello, everybody.
All right. And we're here at Cedars West End for a show that you're doing with Angela Pearlie and the Howling Moons.
Yep.
And this is one of your usual haunts, right?
Yeah. This is the hometown location, pretty much. We used to play the place, the Lemon Grove, for a while there, which doesn't really exist anymore. But we did Lemon Grove and Cedars, and in the beginning did tons of Lemon Grove shows, but have shifted over to Cedars, and it's new location here, which it, I mean, the place itself is the oldest kind of rock live music, you know, original live music venue in the area, the oldest that's still around, at least. I mean, it opened in 75, and I think about 5 years later, they started having punk bands, and through the 80s, it was like a punk, new wave kind of place, you know, with other things as well. And then, you know, gradually things downtown were closing down, but Cedars always remained. And I mean, there were other venues down there. I, you know, wasn't around back then, but I've heard about them. And Cedars was always around, and then the whole, you know, revitalization of downtown started a few years ago, and people felt that Cedars wasn't really a part of it anymore, and they ended up moving down here. But the location has improved, so, you know, it's a plus in that sense. But it would be cool if it was still at the original location downtown, but, you know.
But nevertheless, if you're looking for good music in Youngstown, Ohio, come to Cedars, right?
Yeah, this is pretty much the place to go.
Nice.
It's a shame there's only one place, but it's, you know, how it goes.
Yeah, it is what it is sometimes. Yeah. I mean, Youngstown isn't the biggest town in the world, so you can kind of understand.
No, it's not. Hold on, people. Yeah, the other band is playing.
Do that, yeah. You get know, to talk to people and...
Yeah, exactly.
Instead they've of, already heard you.
Exactly,
so, yeah.
Exactly. Instead of, I mean, you know, when you play a late show sometimes, everybody just leaves right when the music finishes. You know, you like...
Except the cool kids stick around. So then you got the really good
ones. Well, they're the hardcore ones, but you're going to talk to them anyway.
You know? Probably true.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll edit that part out, obviously, but...
That's cool.
Or whatever we can...
Whatever.
Exactly. So yes, we just took a little pause to say hello to Angela Pearlie.
To greet the other band.
Rest of the crew.
Yeah, the town band.
Indeed. And it's going to be a great show tonight. But we can talk about them later. Let's talk a little bit about you first.
Okay.
So Demos Papademos, obviously you're Irish. Let's just start right there.
Exactly. I'm ready for St. Patrick's Day. I've been making haggis all week.
And you're drinking Guinness right now?
Yeah, exactly. Haggis is what? Like blood sausage?
I'm not exactly sure what's inside of it, but I know the outside is a sheep's stomach.
Yeah, that's what
and
it
then
is, right.
They
right,
boil
right.
it and it's all, yeah. There are plenty
it's a fun
of,
word,
of weird foods from out there. Yeah, well, it is a fun word.
Yeah.
Especially when Michael Myers says it. Or Mike Myers. Michael Myers was the killer, Mike Myers is the comedian. Whatever.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah.
So I married an axe murderer. Great thing. No, but obviously you are of Greek heritage.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
My father is Greek. My mother's American. I'm a Greek American.
Okay.
A little bit of both. And yeah, the music reflects that. You know, I've grown up with equal influences, I think, you know, from both cultures. And I've spent a lot of time in Greece. I've lived over there. I mean, I grew up every summer spending you know, half the summer over there, and still have a lot of family in Athens, and you know, spend a lot of time over there as well. And you know, I've you know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten more into Greek roots music. I mean, obviously, I got into American roots music through sort of the obvious, you know, sources, through rock and roll music, basically, and then through people like Bob Dylan. And, you know, mm-hmm. then you gradually get into, like, who is Woody Guthrie and mm-hmm. who is Robert Johnson. And so you do that. But, you know, I'm 28 now. Around the time I was 20, 21, I became interested in the idea of, you know, well, what is the Greek equivalent of all that stuff? And I, you know, I knew a lot of this stuff, you know, songs that became standards in the way that, you know, Sweet Home Chicago is a standard that, you know, people may not know Robert Johnson's version of the song,
right.
but they've heard it as, you know, the blues rock staple
right.
that it became in the 70s.
Even if it was the Blues Brothers doing it or something.
Yeah, know? Exactly, exactly. I mean, but so I knew... It's sort of more contemporary, I guess, if you will, Greek roots music. And, you know, I bought a bouzouki one summer when I was over there and, you know, didn't really learn for the first few years that I had it. And I'm still not a great bouzouki player, but I can do it well enough to put in a little bit of the flavor
okay.
and, you know, a little bit of what vision I'm going for. But no, I became interested in that stuff and, you know, gradually started researching who some of these guys were and, you know, got into rebetiko music, which I'm really interested in. And, you know, I don't really play much of it, but it's just an influence,
mm-hmm.
Which is the Greek blues, for the lack of a better term. It's, I mean, basically it started in around the 1920s when a lot of Greek refugees were kicked out of the crumbling Ottoman Empire,
mm-hmm.
Smyrna. And actually, both my grandparents came over to Athens from Smyrna.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a family, you know, connection there.
My my great-grandfather was actually from Lebanon.
Okay.
And he had the exact same situation. Like, he
yeah.
and his brother basically had to either get the hell out of the Ottoman
yeah.
Empire or starve to death.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they actually
because
came over
were
to
they
Brazil.
Christians?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's...
Yeah, so everybody was getting kicked out of that
exactly,
time.
Because the Turkish state was being formed, and they had decided the Turkish nationality would be based on being a Muslim,
mm-hmm.
on, you know, on religious identity. So
mm-hmm.
I also studied history
there
as
you
well.
Go.
So that's where this whole part's coming from.
Well, all that plays into your music, too, in fact. I think
yeah,
if people
I
listen
think
to
so.
It, they can pick up that you're kind of a bit of a history buff and
yeah.
you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But
so
anyway.
You're saying about the... The 20s, the music form.
Yeah, so, and, you know, a lot of the refugees lived in slums and were part of the underworld, essentially. And a lot of the songs are about, you know, doing drugs, you know, smoking hashish, women, you know, bad luck, being poor. It's like the blues, sort of. It's in, and it happened at the same time that the blues was coming
mm-hmm.
together in the 20s and the 30s. And that's why a lot of people make the connection. I mean, obviously, there's no musical...
Right.
Now they're playing stringed instruments. But, you know, so I'm interested in that very much. And, you know, through the 40s it became a little more censored, if you will. But it also lost some of its edge because it reflected what popular taste was like. And not everybody wanted to sing about being stoned and broke.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think it kind of had I mean, obviously your knowledge of Greek music is much greater than mine, but just from talking to you and learning a little bit about it when I was writing about your album last year, which we're going to talk
and
a little
I
bit
should
about.
Give you some stuff to listen to.
You should. Damn
should
it.
Burn something.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to check some
yeah.
out. But I saw some parallels when we were talking about the history, and
yeah.
the same sort of thing happened in American folk music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 50s you had the Weavers, who were great in the way that they preserved a lot of the old songs,
right.
but they also took out references to cocaine or took out references to sex and
right, exactly.
lead belly or whatever
exactly,
it was to make
exactly.
it more palatable for the 50s audience.
Yeah, and people, that's what people wanted. I mean, you know, like my grandmother didn't want to listen to songs about being stoned.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? She liked other kind of nicer music, you know.
And I think also in this country, at least, they wanted to forget about the Depression. You know,
yeah.
that was behind them.
Yeah.
The 50s were like the glowing glory era.
Right,
like,
right.
we don't want songs about, right. you know, Woody Guthrie writing about people being broken, about how, you know,
right,
they're
right.
oppressed and everything. We want to talk about nuclear power and how great it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Leave It to Beaver yeah. and I Love Lucy and all that shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I was, do you know Pittsburgh that well?
A little bit.
You know Jerry's record store?
No.
It's in Squirrel Hill. It's an old, it's all vinyl. Yeah. And I mean, there are sections of it that, I mean, it's almost like a library. And there are sections of it that look like they haven't been touched since 1980.
Okay.
I mean, that's the kind of place it is. But I was there and actually ran into one of the Avett brothers on the stairs going, I mean, I just crossed by and I was like, who is that guy I know? And then we walk in. You're like, oh, you know, that's the guy from the Avett Brothers. I'm like, this is absurd. But they were playing with Old Crow Medicine Show
okay.
that night. But I was in there, and I was looking for some old Greek records. And, you know, I was looking around, and none of the records they had were Rebetiko records. And they were all old records from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and maybe some stuff from the 40s. But, you know, that just shows that a lot of the Greek-American population at the time wasn't listening to this stuff, which was, you know, the old, weird Greek folk music, like the old, weird America. Like,
I gotcha.
Grail Marcus.
Yeah.
So it's sort of that kind of equivalent. I was, you know, watching that, I was looking at that, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, this makes sense. I mean, a lot of the people that weren't, you know, buffs, if you will, weren't listening to that stuff.
I gotcha. So... has there been sort of a renaissance in Greece itself of people going back to that music now, kind of like there has been with older folk here? Or?
Not really. I mean, in the 60s and the 70s, a lot of people, the people, say my father's generation, got into that.
Okay.
They re-embraced it. And today, you can, I mean, anywhere around Athens you go, you will hear guys, like one guy with a guitar and one guy with a bouzouki playing these old songs. I mean, you don't have to look hard for it. So you will, it's very much alive in that sense. But in a commercial sense, it's not really that big.
Good.
I mean, there aren't many, to my knowledge, there aren't many sort of young bands that are re-embracing this stuff with a youthful approach. But, you know, it's still very much alive.
Gotcha. So, in I guess similar to the way Americana is today, I mean, you got some bands like these guys, the Hollow Moons, who have taken roots rock and are making it more of a popular form again. But then you got a lot of the more traditional, you know, folks who know that they're in a niche market.
Right.
Know that
right.
they're not going to be the Avett Brothers or whoever.
Right, right.
But they want to sort of keep something alive.
But I mean, I think Americana is much more thriving. And a lot of that just has to do with the size of the country. I mean, comparing a country of 11 million people to the U.S. and a kind of music that's, you know, quite connected to rock and roll itself, which is, you know, probably had the biggest influence on popular music, you know, Western popular music in the past 50, 60 years, you know. So much of it goes back to, you know, Chuck Berry and all of those guys, if this is making sense.
No, it is. It is. I mean
you could be the Old Crow Medicine Show and do string band music with, you know, like, you know, Charlie Poole, let's say.
Right.
But still, people are going to look at it as like, oh, these guys have the rock and roll approach. Even though they're really kind of just re-embracing 30 string bands. But most people don't know that.
Right.
You know.
That's true. I mean, same thing, like, I think the Avetts are a perfect example. You know, they are really the first popular bluegrass band.
Yeah.
Since
you know, I really
way
don't
back
know
in the
them
day.
That well.
Yeah? Yeah, we should check them out. They're
I should.
Entertaining.
I mean, I've heard them. Mm-hmm. But...
next time their father comes through town, I'll have to hook you up with him, Jim Avett. He's an entertaining guy.
He's a musician too, isn't he?
Yeah, he. We've actually done some interviews with him and caught him a couple times when he's been through. He's
very cool.
He's an interesting guy because he didn't do it for his entire adult life. He could have gone to Nashville and made a career, but he decided instead to start a business.
Okay.
And the guys in this generation, Seth and whatever, they say, you know, that they really have a chance at a career because their father gave one up.
Raised those boys,
something
right?
Something like that. Yeah. But, I mean, he figured, you know, once his sons got popular and he was retired, basically.
Somebody's Everybody's getting into their Django here. I think I might know who that is turning it up.
Well, not that I object, it's just that's plotting out absolutely everything. Okay,
okay, we're back to normal now.
We are.
I feel like a friend of mine who also works here, who's a big French enthusiast, may have just walked in and like cranked it up.
Well, that, but maybe that'll not happen with the, yeah, the crazy French jazz.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to finish that off, what I was saying was, so he was the kind of guy that, you know, basically in his retirement decided to sort of go back and just kind of do a little bit.
That's
of
really
it on his own. So
you don't hear much. I guess when you're the father of the Avett brothers, more attention will be given.
A little. I mean, he's not in it for money. He's not, you know.
And I'm not implying.
Yeah, no. But I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, the Avett thing brings some people in, and he's got a completely different style. But whatever. I'm the same thing. Some other friends of ours from the area. Do you know Mayfields at all?
I don't think so.
Okay. David or Valerie. They're the parents of David Mayfield Parade, Mayfield.
Right, I have heard
And
them.
Jessica Lee Mayfield.
Yeah.
So they kind of did the same thing. I mean, they used to have a family band.
Yeah.
They were retired for years from the music industry, but now they're kind of, you know, going back and starting their own thing again. So.
And she's getting really big.
She is, which is great to see.
She's got a new record out, I think.
It's coming out in, I want to say April. I believe.
I think she'll be down at Club Cafe.
Nice.
Have you been to Club Cafe?
I haven't.
That's a great venue.
Is it?
Yeah.
This guy loves Pittsburgh. I don't know.
I'm a Pittsburgh guy.
I mean, it's all right as long as you hate the Steelers. We're all good.
I don't even know what's going on with that whole thing. I have no idea.
I'm from Cleveland, so it doesn't matter. As long as you hate the Steelers and you hate Michigan, that's all you need to know.
I'm indifferent.
Okay, well, indifference at least is close enough, I suppose.
Hey, I'm not going to alienate my Pittsburgh people.
Indeed. I suppose that's fair enough.
Yeah.
If you were from Grand Rapids, I wouldn't expect you to say fuck Michigan either, so.
I don't know. I mean, I grew up more with Greek soccer on, so.
Okay, fair
enough. Club Cafe is a great venue. I mean, it's probably my favorite place in Pittsburgh.
You're playing there tomorrow, too,
yeah, tomorrow
right?
night we're playing there. It's an early show. Really early. We'll be on at 8. And done by 9, so. But that's how they go. I mean, unless they have a big headliner, they do 2 shows in a night. So an early and a late show.
Gotcha.
So they get 4 bands on stage. And that's, I mean, I guess they've modeled themselves after the New York style approach where you've got like a different band on every hour, so
okay,
that's cool. Sometimes you would want to be able to play a little bit longer, but you know,
whatever works, right?
Yeah,
as long as it's a good
brevity, it's a good one too.
Indeed.
So anyway,
so yeah, let's talk a little bit about your music now that we've kind of gotten into the base of it. Last year you came out with an album by the name of
Wandering Through the Wilderness.
Indeed. And I can testify it was a pretty damn cool album.
Yeah, thank you.
In fact, I haven't gotten to do any of these as sort of a let's open up the envelope and see who won kind of a thing. But actually, next week, our 3rd annual Surfy Awards are coming out. The Shiny Silver Surfboard, official title.
Nice.
And I want to let you know, since this will be out by then, that you're actually winning the award for Debut Artist of the Year.
Nice.
So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Cheers.
In fact, cheers. I know it's not actually your very first album, technically, but it's your, you know,
with
a new band, and I figure you do qualify for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I am looking at it as the beginning of this, you know,
the new era of
this
Demo's
project, or this, whatever you want to call it. If it was a band with a name, I would say of this band, but I can't do that, you know.
Right. That's kind of the problem with having your own name is the label, you know? You can have 50 different people in the band and it's still Demos Papademos, right?
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from just not really being able to come up with a band name that satisfied me. I mean, there are a lot of people that, you know, have a band, but it's really just the one guy. Like Wilco, it's really just Jeff Tweedy.
Pretty much.
I mean, you know, I like Wilco, but it's Jeff Tweedy in his back.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, that's when you do, like, Demos Papademos and the... Yeah, you know, exactly. Like, I mean, Angela Pearlie and the Howlin' Moons, Billy Bragg and the Blokes, because exactly. I know you're a Billy Bragg
fan.
Yeah,
I love Billy Bragg. Well, I'm still looking for that, you know, name.
Okay. Okay.
We practice on Windermere Street in Hubbard. They've always jokingly said this should be called the Windermere Street Hustlers. But that's too, like, jug band.
Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Too much of a joke.
Yeah. Well, hey. Yeah. Whatever makes you popular, that's what I always say, right?
But, yeah.
So why don't you you tell us a little bit about the music? I mean, obviously, we already hinted it's a kind of a, as I coined it, Greco-Americana.
Yeah. Although, leaning more towards the Americana. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, I don't even, not, you know, I guess it's in a conscious way. I don't know. I mean, but that's, you know, naturally, you know, the style that I write. And I'm not going to, I mean, I love rebetiko music, but I'm not just going to, you know, write rebetiko songs. Right. It's one of those things that it'd be like, you know, Sandy, you're going to write Delta blues songs and just really try to get into that style. And you know, it's an interest of mine and it's an influence, but it's not primarily, you know, what I do.
Gotcha.
Although
I'm sorry.
I have considered doing an EP of rebetiko songs, just guitar bouzouki. I'd have one recorded. And it'll probably just be a long-term thing that at some point I'll get it together.
Gotcha.
You know? I mean, I actually record a lot of that stuff around the house. And in the past year, I've actually put a lot more time in on the bouzouki and learning these things. And, you know, the guitar technique, like playing nylon string guitar, which is, you know, the kind of guitar you would use for that. So I actually have written fewer Americana-style songs in the past 6 months than I normally would have. But I've learned more old Greek songs.
I got you.
So it kind of evens out, you know.
Okay. But I think even if on this album it wasn't the primary focus, the Greek mixture really does stand out just because it's so rare. You know, you do expect influences from, for instance, Mexico every so often in a band. Or,
right,
you know, Southern.
The whole Southwestern kind of, and a lot of the Texas guys
exactly.
always had that going
right.
on.
Right, so, you know, you might hear a Spanish guitar and you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Right.
But you hear some Greek stuff, that doesn't happen too often. So even if it's just kind of a more minor part of the music, it really stands out.
Right. And that song, Minore Tis Avgis, mm-hmm. which is an old standard that I put on as a guitar bouzouki instrumental, that was really the best representation of that on the record. And I made the decision to do that just to really highlight that. And I think that it still made sense within the, you know, within the album itself. Mm-hmm. And I put one, I mean, there was 10 original songs. One, Poor Boy Blues, which had just been, you know, a way to show that kind of old-timey influence. And then Minore Tis Avgis, which showed that Mediterranean Greek influence. And I think made the record in a way. But, you know, again, I mean, I like the record. I like the songs, but, you know, it's one of those things that I'm always like, you know, I should have done it this way or I should have done it that way. And, you know how those things go.
Second thoughts.
Oh, yeah,
kind of thing.
That happens. And, you know, with the band, I mean, we've been playing these songs pretty consistently for about a year, so they become different entities.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, you know, the record sounds good, but it doesn't have that feel.
I gotcha.
But then there are other things that you do in the studio that you can't reproduce on a stage.
Right.
So
I guess that's what the live albums are for, right? You know?
Exactly.
You can come out with
one of those. You gotta keep recording shows and...
Indeed. Indeed.
But, you know, I'll let you speak. But, you know, I think that, in my opinion, what ties the record together are kind of the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound full of myself, because I can be quite self-deprecating, but I put focus in on the lyrics, and I thought that tied things together pretty well, even though there were a lot of musical twists that maybe wouldn't make sense on somebody else's record,
right.
But there's a continuity lyrically, so.
Well, I think I talked about that in my review of the album as well.
Yeah, you know, which was a great review.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, but I think you really did hone in on what I'm, you know, trying to do in a way.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear.
In a way that others haven't. You know.
Okay. Well, I always like to hear that I actually understood what I was writing about.
I like the photo.
Angie actually said the same thing, which she wrote me the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of always nice when they say, yeah, you got it. I'm surprised.
I know.
Really? That's a surprising thing in a review? That doesn't say much for the state of music reviews, I guess. It's like, you actually understood the album that you were writing about. Good job. I'm like, whoa. But no, I think... sort of naturally, because of your style, maybe, it's easy to kind of compare you to Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah.
And I, you know, even when I'm comparing you to Bob Dylan, will not say that you're as good as Bob Dylan, certainly.
Well, I mean,
it's Bob Dylan, right?
It's quite a, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you don't get, I mean, he's one of the towering figures of, like, late 20th century popular music. Yeah,
indeed. But no, you do sort of have, not sort of later when he was getting more abstract, but you kind of have that feel of early Dylan.
Yeah.
When he was working out, you know, the lyrical melody almost of how he was going to speak and all that.
Right.
I think you're very similar to that.
Right.
And you do obviously focus very much on the lyrics as opposed to, you know, the way some other people do it where it's all about the music, which is great.
I leave the tempo and the rhythm to other people a lot of the time.
Okay.
But no, I mean, Dylan's a huge influence. I should mention my mom is a huge Dylan fan, so I grew up with every Bob Dylan release and going to Bob Dylan concerts and definitely, you know, it really did have a major impact on me. Although, you know, originally, I mean, the stuff I first got into was, you know, Green Day and the Ramones, pop punk, and, you know, just, but I liked Dylan, and so I started, you know, listening to what he was influenced by. Right. And
well, I don't think Dylan is ever anybody's first real interest, you know? Like, for me, like, I grew up in the Cleveland area, it was all about classic rock for us, you know?
Yeah.
Like Michael Stanley and the whole movie with the Eagles and Creedence and all that. And Dylan for me was always a secondary thing. I mean, when I was younger, I couldn't even stand to listen to Dylan.
Yeah. You know? See, I mean, I grew up with Dylan.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't say that, you know, I was 7 years old and I loved Bob Dylan. I won't say that I was even, you know, 10 years old and loved Dylan. But by the time I was probably 13.
Mm-hmm.
14, you know, I liked it, and I was very into it, but I grew up with that music around, you know, I grew up with that music around the house, as well as Greek music around the house.
Okay.
And, you know, Green Day through my headphones. So, I, you know, I think, I don't know, it probably logically makes sense that what my music sounds like. Maybe the Green Day.
Yeah, I don't know about the Green Day. That doesn't really make sense, but I think
if
you took a record player on each side and played Dylan on one and Greek folk music on the other and sort of let it combine in the middle, that would be Demos Papademos.
Yeah. Although my dad wasn't really listening to folk music, but...
Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, whatever works.
Whatever. It was Greek.
So, as far as Dylan goes, though, what would you say your favorite album is?
You know, I really couldn't pick.
Yeah?
No, I couldn't. I mean, and I like it all. I like it from his earliest stuff through the gospel to his latest. I mean, I really, really like it all. And even, you know, even the periods where people think, you know, that he completely lost it. If he had just released fewer records with just the good songs on them, they probably wouldn't be regarded as bad periods. Because, I mean, in the 80s, he wrote a lot of great songs. I mean, Every Grain of Sand, Blind Willie McTell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he just had put, you know, they can that span from, let's say, 81 to 89, if he just put, like, two records out, then it wouldn't have been remembered as a bad period.
But he also wouldn't have made anywhere near as much money, and the record companies wouldn't have made as much money off of him. And
a lot of it was the record companies, you know, pressing him. The closest I can come to that is probably Highway 61.
Mm.
I mean, I think that really is... And I know it's a generic Dylan record to say, you know, that you think is the best, but, I mean,
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it's my favorite.
I mean, like a Rolling Stone, you know? What else do you need to say?
Right.
Ballad of a Thin Man, I think that's one of his best songs. It's so well written, and I really can't think of another song like it. It's all,
right.
It's such an analysis. It's such a, you know, just all the questions posed. It's just, you know, I don't even know where to begin. You know, Tom Thumb's Blues, you know, that, it's just, you know, amazing stuff. I think it's better than Blonde on Blonde. Mm. I don't dislike Blonde on Blonde, but I think that if he had continued in that direction, it would have started getting pretentious.
Okay.
So I'm glad he, you know, did the basement tapes and went up to Woodstock and all that, where I feel like there is a tendency of people to say, oh, but he could have, you know, like been playing with Hendrix and, you know, doing the rock god late right. 60s thing. But that wasn't his thing, and I'm glad he didn't do it. And it's more interesting that way.
And if there's anybody in the world who will make you look at least less pretentious, it's probably Robertson. So, you know, that's going to
be... Yeah.
Great musician and all, but not exactly a small ego.
No. The band is great as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I don't have as much against Robbie Robertson as a lot of people do. I just mean artistically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really have anything against him either, but you have to admit the guy knew he was good at very least. Let's say that.
Yeah.
But he was good, so you can't really complain either, right?
Yeah.
Let's just talk a little bit about a few of your songs individually, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah. I could just keep talking about Dylan.
Yeah, no, we could, too, if you want. That's totally cool. But you can also talk about how he influenced some of your stuff, too, if you want. But what do you feel is sort of the best crafted lyrical song you have on the album?
I think... For different reasons, If I Had Religion or Barrier Doors would be the best. And those are written fairly early on in the process, which is always interesting. But If I Had Religion, I'm really proud of that one in its abstract sense of, I don't know, the whole it doesn't really have anything to do with religion. It's more just about, you know...
Grounding is what it felt like to me.
It's about if I had something, if I, basically, in a sense, if I was believing deeply in what I'm doing, then maybe I could reach a contented state.
Mm.
And just a belief in what you're doing. So I think that's where it came from.
Okay.
But, you know, religion is always an interesting thing in songwriting because it evokes so much there are no biblical references in the song, but biblical references in songwriting, you know, look at Dylan,
right.
Look at Leonard Cohen. I mean, it adds such a depth. Sometimes you just think, I need to just study the Bible to write songs. I don't care about the spiritual stuff. I want lyrics.
God, you know, said to Abraham, give me a son.
Exactly.
Right?
You know?
I guess I could see that. Even honestly, I'm an atheist, and I have no problem telling people that.
Yeah.
But I read the Bible as mythology.
Oh yeah.
All the time, just because it is kind of a universal language for Western culture.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, in a historical sense, it's very interesting, and just in the influence that it's had on, you know, on everything.
Right.
In Western society, you know. I mean, I'm not very religious. I won't say that I'm not. I mean, I'm a Greek Orthodox Christian, but it's more out of tradition than any kind of hardcore belief, you know.
Okay.
So, but no, I'm happy with If I Had Religion. I really, really like that song. I like the imagery. To me, it you know, it represents a period in my life. Barrier Doors is a different one, and I think that it does a good job of combining the American and European influences.
Mm-hmm. That one almost, to me, had kind of a gypsy feel to it.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of a dance
definitely.
Music.
It's not per se Greek,
right?
But it's a kind of Mediterranean music that I've heard in Greece. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
You know, it's stuff that, you know, you wouldn't hear it and say, oh, this is Greek music, but, you know, you wouldn't not hear something like that in Greece. Contemporary Greek music. But, no, I wrote that, and both of those songs were written about, I wouldn't say written about, written shortly after I spent time living in France. So a lot of my travels over there informed those songs, and you know, there's like the Conga Riviera's Greece,
right.
And so that all comes out of my time, you know, traveling around France. But I felt that that one could, you know, I mean, if you didn't know what the song sounded like, and just looked at the lyrics, I mean, the whole empty bottles, empty glasses, I mean, that could be a country song. So I feel like it combines both of those worlds, you know, pretty well.
Okay.
The other song, Weary Words, that closes the album, that was written sort of about travels.
Indeed.
Know.
That's actually one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, a lot of people like that. They don't really do it live too much. I feel like, you know, the focus is really on the lyric.
Right.
And a lot of time, you know, doing it live.
Well, it's a really dense lyric, too.
Yeah.
You know, you've got so many words packed into such a small space, it might not necessarily come out on stage. So I can definitely see that, too. But I think purely lyrically, though, it may be the best on the album.
Yeah.
So
I could see that.
I could see that. I mean, if you want to say something on the album is the best, it's all my stuff, right?
Yeah.
No, definitely. And the other one, honestly, that really spoke to me was the title track, Wandering Through the Wilderness.
Oh, right.
So would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, a lot of people really have responded to that. And I wrote that song traveling out to Chicago. And I was actually going to record some things with a friend at the studio in DePaul University. And he wanted me to come up with some song, and I had other ones. But I was like, you know, I should come up with something just for this. So the whole drive out to Chicago, I was thinking of a lyric, and it just stopped at a rest area and wrote basically like the first verse, and then finished most of it the next morning and had a rough version of it, and then, you know, later tweaked the lyrics a little bit. But I felt like that song continued many of the themes of, you know, self-analysis and searching, but with a little more positive of a tone.
Okay.
And a little bit more philosophical in a sense, and that we're all kind of going through this together.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
It's your music. You say what you're going to say.
No, what do you think?
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think if you are looking for an entryway into how or why one would compare you to Dylan, I think that is where it sort of dovetails so well. I think early in his career, when he was sort of finishing up with the protest music,
mm-hmm.
and trying to figure out where he was going to go next, he had that same kind of feeling. Like, it was
like
very
close. Like another side.
Yeah. It was all that, well, you know, you could do crazy things like Motorcycle Nightmare, or you could, you know, sort of have something with real meaning. What's the real meaning going
right,
to be?
Right.
And he was trying to figure out that philosophy. But he didn't quite have it yet. It was sort of a proto-philosophy, you know?
Right.
What is Bob Dylan going to be about? And I think
his whole philosophy is sort of like, well, what do you think it's about?
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways.
You know, in a lot of ways.
And
I like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, you know, not to get back onto Dylan, because I'm sure the two of us could talk about Dylan forever.
Sure.
But I think that, excuse me, Self-Portrait is the most misunderstood album in the history of
albums. Well, now it's a little more.
I think it's a little better, yeah. But I mean, it says it all right there. Self-Portrait,
right,
and it's this
right.
picture that's just completely grotesque. And
right, and but it also says it all about him in the sense that, you know, is this sincere or is it not?
Right.
I mean, is this really, you know, a self-portrait?
Right.
I mean, because you can listen to that and say, well, you know, these are songs that really mean a lot to him.
And he thinks the crappiest version of it, too.
But you could also look at it as, like, well, he just, you know, chose a bunch of covers and just was fooling around in the studio.
Right.
So, but, and it's that, you know.
Well, I mean, to me, what it says is, you know, he was looking at himself in a lot of ways as the sort of twisted figure that pop culture had made him into. You know, he was looking at the way other people viewed him
right,
and said, that's
right.
not me. That's not Robert Zimmerman. That's this big Bob Dylan thing that I've created, but that's not me.
Right, right.
And
right.
So that's why he took a lot of his own songs and had stranger versions of them, or took the guys who had followed after him, Paul Simon or whoever,
right,
and did
right.
their songs. It was kind of like, well, Paul Simon thinks he's me, but he doesn't even know who the fuck I am, you know?
Well, I think he was also interested in, you know, putting a Paul Simon song on the same record as, you know, what does he do, like Gotta Travel On, and like right. Little Sadie, and you know, things like that, which I think he wanted to, you know, just put it all on the same page, sort of.
Fair
contemporary
enough.
And the roots.
Right.
You know.
I mean, it was all, you know, his influences, him, and the people he influenced.
Right, right.
And I think when people view it that way, through this sort of almost backwards, telescopic, funhouse mirror kind of a way, it's actually a really cool album.
Right, right.
But interestingly,
I do Little Sadie in shows, and this probably speaks to...
It's one of your best songs live, I have to
everybody
say.
Everybody likes it,
I
yeah.
love it, I do.
It probably speaks to the influence of Dylan on my music that I started doing it through Doc Watson, through, you know, mm-hmm. his version, and forgot about the Dylan version. But I mean, okay. I knew it. I had heard it. I mean, my mom loves Self-Portrait, and she always did.
Oh, nice.
And I'll give her the credit that, I mean, she was into Self-Portrait when nobody was into Self-Portrait. but at some point, I heard, like, Self-Portrait, and I thought, oh, wait. Dylan did this here. I completely forgot about that, you know. But so it's subconscious, I guess.
I gotcha.
But anyway, Wander Through the Wilderness, though. We were talking about that. No, I really like that song, and I'm glad that I had done it as like a full band song with violin, and I had this in my mind, this really kind of poppy arrangement with like piano on it and violin, and just to make a really catchy song, and I never was able to get there. And then I did a show out in Philadelphia, just a solo acoustic show in the July of 2012, and I just did that song solo acoustic, and it was the best song of the night. I mean, I heard the recording and I was like, oh, this is how it has to be on the record. And it just was stripped down, no other instruments, and I'm really glad that I did that, because it you know, to have just one track on the record that is just me mm-hmm. with my acoustic, you know, it says something about me as a songwriter,
right.
sort of.
Well, I think it kind of gets the heart of the feeling of the song, too,
yeah,
because
yeah.
it's all about, well, as it says, wandering through the wilderness, you know, and for you to be alone, essentially, really kind of brings out that theme of,
yeah.
you know, you searching for something on your own
yeah,
without
yeah.
anybody being able to help you kind of
right.
thing, so.
And I don't always do it live, either. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but again, it's one of those songs like Weary Words that has more of an intimacy to it
right.
that I don't always feel goes over that well, you know.
I got you.
In the way that something like Little Sadie was.
Right,
you know.
Right. Well, actually, that's something I find interesting about you, because I've seen you a few times now
yeah.
live, and the very first time I saw you was in
at the Kent stage.
Yeah, just a huge room.
Which I was not that happy with that night, because it was great to play there, but it was not that, you know, great of a turnout.
Right.
And it's a tough thing to do. I mean, but anyway.
Well, I mean, it was an interesting booking, because honestly, there's no way you were going to fill that place or come anywhere close. But
yeah.
then, you know, Tom likes the support.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
local
yeah,
artists
yeah.
so much that they like to have people in there too. So, you know, whatever works. But it is just a huge room. And I guess even sitting in the front, I didn't really pick up on what you were about until I saw you in a smaller room. Because you really are, honestly, sort of a smaller room kind of an act, even when you have a whole band.
And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, you know. We were talking about J.D. McPherson.
Mm-hmm.
He could have played you know, the ballroom, the Beachland Ballroom, but he was in the tavern.
Right.
And they're a small room kind of band. I mean, when you're just, you know, basically right up on stage with the band and feeling the energy from it, that you know, that's the kind of band that they are. And I think that my band is that way, too.
So what would you say is the key aspect that makes you sort of that kind of intimate setting kind of a band?
I don't know. I think that with roots music, a lot of the time, that's the way it is. It's folk music, and it's meant to be enjoyed in a communal way, sort of. But I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about garage rock, sort of, that it's, you know, it's a small setting of kind of music to really feel it. You know,
right.
You know, not doing any kind of big, you know, sing-along kind of thing from the stage. You
right.
Know.
No Pete Seeger kind of, you know, bouncing ball.
Yeah, not really. But, you know, I should mention the band. Andre Tichkin is on upright bass. Sandy Quatson is on violin. Ralph Rich on drums. You know, I think it really is a great band.
Mm-hmm.
We've, you know, Andre and I had played together in a band before that, around 2010, and recorded a few things. And, you know, I was out in New York for a while, and then came back in 2012, and we got back together. So, I mean, we had a musical history.
Sort of. Okay.
Then Sandy came on that year, and then right after I put the record together, Ralph, because the band doesn't play on the record,
right.
Ralph joined the drums, and it really, you know, about the end of 2012, early 2013, it really clicked, sort of, as a band. And, you know, it's a different thing having a record and then a band, and that, you know, it's, so it's a different thing. It very much is a different representation.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I mean, some of the songs, you know, I'm really happy the way they were recorded in the studio, and I wouldn't change them. And then there are other ones that, you know, unless you hear the band really doing it, I don't think the listener can ever really get it. But, you know, any band can say that.
I mean, there definitely is a huge difference between a studio album and live. And I've heard studio albums that I just could not stand, or just didn't get even.
Yeah.
But the live band is great.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have mutual friends, the Womacks, who anybody who follows No Surf knows that I love. I mean, their studio albums are darn good.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with them. Absolutely nothing. But doesn't even come close to capturing what they're like live.
No, it
doesn't. Live, they're just one of the
I really like the latest one. I think these drums are fine.
I think they'll be fine. We're gonna wrap it up in a second.
You know, the last one was really, really good, but it doesn't have the intensity on the show.
Right.
You know. And so I know what you mean. And
well, the intensity really is like, it's so hard to get on a record, even a live record. It really, you cannot do it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with you. Like, I really like your studio album, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I gave it a very good review, and I'm giving you a freaking award. Come on.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, the esteemed selection committee that is Diesel. but when you're in a small room and you're within a couple feet of you and your band and it's all working, it's just a totally different feel.
Yeah, I know.
And anybody who gets a chance to see Demos, I have to recommend, you know, check them out, whether it's here in Youngstown or in Pittsburgh or in Cleveland or wherever you can possibly see them.
And then, you know, especially, I think a lot of the ballads, you can capture that in the studio much easier than you can in a live setting.
Right.
You can layer a song well, put in the violin parts and do all of that. But to really capture the feel of a band that's just rocking, that has, you know, a chugging rhythm section going on and just an energy there, capturing that in the studio is one of the most difficult things.
Right.
I mean, it's no matter who you are or where you are, it's just it's a difficult thing to do. You know. I'm not saying it's impossible.
Right. Well, it all comes down to, you know, will and a way. You know, if you have a good producer and you know what you're doing and all that. And...
Whoa. This is a bow.
It is a bow.
For Andre, for the bass player.
Okay.
He forgot it at the studio. That's Pete Revere, actually. We're recording a record with him now.
I was actually just going to ask you about that, so that's a good transition.
It is.
So tell us what's up next before we run here.
Well, we're working on this new record. Started in December, recording a few things. And I did that one just old Greek Rebetiko song as well. We've got like 3-4 songs recorded now, and we'll be doing some of them live tonight.
Okay.
And you know, again, it's continuing sort of. I think right now I've been writing more things with the Mediterranean in mind, and so there will be more bouzouki, and I'm happier, you know, with the bouzouki parts that I'm writing and developing. So there will be more of that on the record, but there definitely will be some, you know, fun Americana stuff.
Okay.
Which actually is quite difficult to write, in my opinion.
Like, music-wise, you mean?
Well, yeah, I think to do these, maybe it's just who I am, but to do these songs about searching for meaning and, you know, self-analysis, all that, that's not difficult for me to do. But to get some really fun Americana.
So a song about, you know, getting dumped by your girlfriend and losing your dog and all that stuff, that's harder for you, is what you're saying? The classic country kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I just mean something that's not as
philosophically minded, maybe?
I don't know, I guess. It's just, it's not, let's just say that fun is hard to do.
Okay.
You're saying the way that, you know, some people say that, you know, of course, you know, drama is great. And that, you know, the dramatic actors really do a great job, and the people that write dramatic films, you know, really do a great job. But, you know, being funny, being a comedian is even harder to do than just, you know, talking about tragedy. Because, I mean, where isn't there tragedy, you know?
Well, I think that's why, to me, honestly, some of the best stuff out there is, you know, like the dramedy. You know, where you can be funny and yet talk about serious stuff
at the same time. I think that's kind of how some of, I don't know, probably, I mean, I don't really write that many positive lyrics, so, even when I have upbeat songs. So,
I think that is, in some ways, what makes music like yours so interesting, though, because you've got sort of this driving, high tempo, you know, lively music, and at the same time, you've got sort of a philosophical, ruminating kind of a lyrical tone, and it makes for an interesting combination too. So aside from a bit more of the Mediterranean influence, are there any other major, I mean, I know you're still early in the process on the new album, but are there any other major differences that you're seeing?
Not yet. You know, what I'm really trying to do is capture the sound. I'm trying to capture the sound of the band.
Gotcha.
Live, especially the live energy that we have. I'm really trying to recapture that. And at the same time, I'm trying to get a little further into some Mediterranean influenced songs.
And you're recording this one all with the band, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That'll make it.
And a few other people, you know, maybe adding, you know, some accordion or maybe some pedal steel, things like that, you know.
I was going to say, it would be interesting with some pedal steel.
I have one song in mind that I want to put some pedal steel on.
Very cool.
So,
I'm always a fan of steel, so.
Oh, yeah. I am as well. I'd love to be able to play it.
Well, I mean, you've got lots of time, right? You're still a young guy. You've got a long career ahead of you. One of these days, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably get the bouzouki down better and then, you know, maybe mandolin.
Yeah, I could see that.
But pedal steel would take a different kind of commitment, I think.
Well, it definitely is a completely different feel.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But then again, I mean, who else plays bouzouki? Steve Earle, right? Can you think of who else?
Well, he plays Irish bouzouki, though.
Yeah, but it's still a bouzouki. Come on.
Okay.
I think his line is, the Irish can play anything that washes up on their shore, so it came from Greece, but what the hell?
Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking about the Weavers earlier. Did you know the Weavers did a Greek song?
They did, yes.
At one of the reunion concerts?
It was on an album in the 50s, too. I'm pretty sure about that.
I only know it from the live version.
Okay.
But
I have almost all their stuff on vinyl, so
Pete Seeger knew what was going on.
Indeed. Well, those guys, I mean, not to get into somebody else's music again, but those guys were just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even if they didn't understand what the words were, they could reproduce a language perfectly. I mean, they did Israeli songs, and, like, you would not believe that they couldn't speak Hebrew fluently. Right. You know, that kind
they
of
did a great job with the Greek.
Yeah, you would know.
No, they really did. They did a great job.
I mean. Nice. Well, I mean, you know, I guess if they can do it, you can certainly do it, right?
Come on. If Pete Seeger did it.
Exactly. Well, I guess, is there anything else you want to add about the new album? Give somebody a preview, or is there any songs that you want to talk a little bit about and just let us know what's coming up? Or?
This is a song, Waiting, that I'll be doing live. Again, continues with the sort of travels. I guess I don't have much to say. You just have to hear the record.
Okay.
You have to hear the record.
Okay. You know. Well, for everybody out there listening to us, I definitely have to recommend Wandering Through the Wilderness. It was a really terrific album. And
thank you.
I said, I don't think you've ever heard, you will have ever heard anything like it. I mean, there's nobody out there who combines.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I love music that combines, you know, different traditions in different ways. And really, nobody out there is doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
So it was really terrific to pick that up and listen to it for the first time, and I still enjoy it. I listened to it on the car ride over here again, in fact.
All right. I did not.
Well, you've heard it many more times than I have. But for anybody out there who's got the opportunity, pick that up now. And do you have any idea when the new one's going to be coming out?
I'd like to say fall.
Okay. So fall 2014, look for the new Demos Papademos, and I'm sure that one will be just as good as well.
Yeah.
So we're going to go...
Hopefully we get that live energy.
Indeed. Well, no, seriously, like I think that would be really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope everybody out there in No Surf Land is as well.
All right.
I'm also looking forward to another beer. And then
so
some Demos and some Andrew Curley. They are sadly empty. But Demos, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank
it's great
you.
To catch
could,
you again.
I could probably keep going here, but we don't need to.
I'm
it's
sure
almost
we could
showtime.
Too. Indeed,
too,
that's what I'm thinking. And we don't want to bore everybody out there too much with our talk of
this
Dylan.
Is,
and
this
all
isn't
that.
Boring.
Yes. Everybody out there is cheering right now, saying, more Demos, more Diesel.
Right.
But no, certainly it was great to have you, and we'll definitely do another one of these when the new album comes out,
definitely.
If not sooner.
Definitely. I appreciate it, and, you know, I hope you all enjoy.
Awesome. So once again, Demos Papademos, thank you very much. The album that's out now is Wandering Through the Wilderness, and there will be a new one out this fall. So check out all of his music. It's really entertaining, and like I said, you've never heard anything like it. So once again, this is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett. This has been another edition of No Surf Music's Burning River Fireside Chats. Y'all have a good one. Signing out.
All right.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammett, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.